The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Runes, the 2018 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2018. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
Well, welcome to the session this afternoon on informative assessment. I'm not going to attend it. Whatever it was, 1 o'clock, how about 3 o'clock on Friday afternoon? So thank you. Thanks for being here. Thanks for making an effort, fighting off jet lag or whatever fatigue you have to be here. Let's pray together if you can. My Heavenly Father, we're very thankful to you for your loving kindness. Thank you for this opportunity to be here. We pray you would bless our time. Help us to grow as teachers, help our students to grow in wisdom and virtue. Through these means, and we pray you to be glorified in all. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, again, welcome. My name is Brian Lynch. I'm the headmaster of Veritas School in Hubert, Oregon. And I also teach humane letters and rhetoric to 11th graders. So I spend about half my day during the week in the classroom teaching, and the rest of the time doing headmaster things as well. So this session is about using formative assessment. And understanding what that is, if that's new to you, but incorporating those means in your classroom, checking for understanding. My goal is that when you leave here today, you'll have some new methods, some new techniques that you can take home and use in September. That's the goal. And if you already know all these things, then you can be reinforced. Perhaps this will be a review, as John Lindsay Gregory says. Review this, always in order, right? So this may be a review for some of you. Thanks for coming anyway. Hopefully you'll be able to learn one or two new things that you can take home and use right away, whether it's September or August. Anybody start in August? Okay, yeah. That's what we start in September. When you go back, it's fall. So we're starting sort of with the assumption that if the student hasn't learned, the teacher hasn't taught. Thank you. The student hasn't learned. Teacher hasn't taught. So the only way we can know as teachers if the student is learning is if we're checking for that along the way, rather than waiting today. We'll talk about that. So that's what's going on here. So if you just give me a show of hands or a thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs sideways, how many of you could explain the difference between formative assessment and summative assessment? Formative, summative. If you think you can explain, give me a thumbs up. If you couldn't, do a thumbs down. If you're not sure, thumbs sideways. Everybody participate, please. Be careful with that. Okay, thumbs up. Wait, where are the thumbs ups? Thank you. Could you get us started with that? The difference between something and informative.
Okay, so a formative assessment is an assessment that checks the process of the understanding along the way, see what the student knows, and it's a bit of a check-in, versus a summative assessment is a final assessment at the end of a unit to see has the student grasped the understanding that you'd like them to come away with at the end of the unit.
Formative along the way, summative at the end. Or the other thumbs ups? Thumbs, or the maybe thumbs. Would anything like to add to that? Anybody want to add anything to that? Yes.
I think formative is not so much for grades, where summative would be for the grade. A grade.
Yes. So, excellent. Yes.
Formative gives the student a chance to confer with the student about how they did their work.
Conferring with the student. So not for grade, conferring with the student, done jury learning, all those things. Excellent. Okay, so those are the kinds of things we're going to be talking about. What is formative assessment versus summative? I did see some sideways and some downs, so that's good. If this is new to you, that's great. That's why we're here. So we'll be talking about that. Let's first look at then that difference between formative and summative. At least the answers are absolutely right on. Summative assessment is that kind of assessment that happens at the end of learning, end of a unit, if it's a test, or some kind of a graded event that it takes place at the end of the unit of learning, whatever it is, 2 weeks, a month, semester grades, whatever those things are. So that's at the end. It's a summing up. And that's the thing that goes in the grade. Formative, of course, is, as was said, the kind of assessment that checks with understanding along the way and gives you a secret information which then you can pass on to students, and also helps inform your teaching and their learning. So it's checking along the way. So it's coaching. It's a coaching process as opposed to the game. Right? The game is a fun summative assessment on Friday night. How do we do? But along the way, in practice, we're working on these skills. That's not going in the win-loss column, right? What we do on Monday afternoon practice does not show up in the paper the next week. But being Friday night, so this is the distinction. So let's look at some of the features here. First of all, a formative assessment, that's what we're focusing on here in this session. And then we'll look into some specifics. So we already had a chance to practice some. Of course, we've already practiced two. We have practiced admit slips and hand signals. By the way, it slips go to the middle and then towards the front, please. Thank you. All right, those are five main features in a formative assessment. So a formative assessment acts as kind of GPS for you in your classroom and where you're going, how it's going in your classroom. But first feature then is frequent checking for understanding during the lesson. Formative assessment occurs during teaching at some point, sometimes frequently during the lesson. Did all those make up? So if you could just hand those up. Okay. Sorry about that. I know that's not your work there, but we'll take it where it goes a little bit. So during the lesson or during the teaching in some way, some time, so that you can adjust the instruction. And it's done frequently during the teaching. That's the main point there, as opposed to the end. Secondly, it's involuntary and all inclusive. This is very, very important. Everybody is involved. All the students are checked for understanding.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
All the students are involved. There's no opt-outs. There's it's all play all the time. Typically, there may be some cold calling kind of things you'll do. But generally speaking, you want everybody involved. Now, in our big slip, we do that because it's a little bit of an artificial environment. But in your classroom, when you check for understanding, you are not going to ask, does everyone understand? Great. Are there any questions? No? Great. Everybody is nice. No questions. Not everybody understood. Perfect. And then I get a test next week. And guess what? 20% kid, you have that. Because I taught and nobody asked any questions. So I assume they do. But that's not what we're talking about, right? That's the kind of thing we want to avoid. So in order to avoid that, you have to check along the way. So it's frequent, to adjust instruction, and everybody is checked. There's no opting out. Again, generally speaking, you want to look for ways to require that. Third, we want to deliberately connect you to our learning partners. We talked about objectives or goals, whatever you want to call them. For our lesson plans in our school, I ask teachers to first, the top of the lesson plan, first describe what are the student learning targets for the day. The student will be able to describe or list even the causes of the transfer. That's first. Then I ask them to describe what assessments they're going to use. What is the target? What assessments? And then finally, they can start plugging in activities. Because I want my teachers to think in that process. What are the students learning? How are they going to check that along the way? And then what will they do? What great activities are going to do? So it's deliberately connected. So the way you check your understanding, the kind of formative assessment we use, is deliberately tied to that, whatever that part is. It's not just a random activity. It is looking for those targets. So frequent, all-inclusive, tied targets, fourth. Then it's used to adjust instruction. So we need to make sure we do these in plenty of time so that if there are questions, there are problems, or things come up, as we look through the admit slips, or all the thumbs are down, and those are around the room, I ask a question like that.
the first question, all of them, you know, I need to back up, especially this is right during instruction, even after instruction, before getting the lesson or something. And I see all the thumbs still down on their side, then we have to back up. So this gives me just a little bit of a check. And by the way, feel free to ask questions anyway along the way. We can have some time at the end, but if there's something that might just blown over too quickly and I was unclear, please do ask. Yes?
You said that the thumbs up, thumbs down, sometimes sideways, it says.
Is it?
How is that different from asking them if there are any questions?
Because I'm requiring everybody to. Now, they may be mistaken, right? They may think they know, I have this, which is why I asked. Okay, tell us then. Are you all thinking, you know, all right, what does it really mean? And are they anything they don't know? So, but you're right, I mean, that's not quite as certain as some of the others that are on this table, because it's sort of self-report. But you do check in with them and make them definitive answer and have others, you know, scaffold others around it to make sure that it really is there. But the nice thing about that is it's quick, easy, takes 2 seconds, scan the room, and check really quickly. So one of the things you'll notice on this chart, this table that I have, is it goes from very, very brief kind of thing of the hand signals all the way to heartness discussion or seminar session, which is, you know, 40 minutes. So 4 seconds to 40 minutes and everything in between. So it depends on what you're looking for and what helps you in the instruction at that point. So thank you for that. Good question. All right, so used to adjust instruction, and typically, as mentioned here, it's typically ungraded. Okay, this is not on this, not on the win-loss column. This is something we're just checking for understanding. It's part of the coaching process, and not usually going to put it in the grade book. Sometimes I violate my own rule here. Sometimes I do put a hardness discussion, for example, seminar discussion is a graded. Then it goes in the grade. But we do so many of them that it's not a big deal. It's not a crisis. It's just a quick check. So we do grade once in a while. Typically, if I'm ungraded, when I used to coach basketball, we would use the scoreboard during a scrimmage. We would score a situation on the scoreboard, and we would play out the scrimmage and see the scoreboard. But that score was never reported in the paper. They don't want to know that, of course, but that's not something that we're going to report. Right? And then it goes to zero, then it's all over. So it's that kind of thing. We're not grading these. This is not an event. It's not a grade issue. It's simply checking to understand. So that's sort of the broad parameters. Are there any questions? Just kidding. Sorry, okay, so let's start looking at some of these. And with those five in mind, with that sort of parameters, the guidelines, let's look at some specific things. So I want to spend about the next 30 minutes in practicing, looking at some of these and getting a chance to practice some. Let's start with whiteboards and response cards. So my assistants here will be handing to you either a whiteboard, personal whiteboard, and a pen, or a response card. Two response cards is an S card and an R card. And I only have 10 boards. So those who are sitting close get to participate. Those in the back. So if you needed them, either a whiteboard or a pen or an S and R cards. Okay. So while they're doing that, how many of you use whiteboards or response cards in your classrooms, and how many times a week? How many times a month do you use whiteboard? 4 times?
Every day.
Oh, I see. 0 times. Everybody show me a hand. Sometimes. Zero. Some. Excellent. Okay. Fantastic. Well, then you know how great whiteboards are. Meaning if you are using them that often, that's great. Let me ask this quickly. How many secondary teachers are in the room? And any elementary teachers? Oh, okay. Any first-year teachers? 10 more years teaching. Excellent. Okay. Thank you. Good. So we have some expertise in the room. That's great. Okay. So on that whiteboard, or if you have anybody who uses the response cards? I'm not really looking at the A and B group also. Okay, so who has the response? You should have. Yeah, okay, S and F card, right? Or it says S on one side, F on the other, right? Okay, so here we go. I'm going to read a series of statements on our whiteboard. If you think this describes summative, please write an S. If you think it's formative, write a S. Very good. You are a clever group. And same thing with S and F, right? S. Okay, here we go. This type of assessment is usually ungraded. This type of assessment is usually ungraded. Graded whole cup, either an S or an F or on your board. So take a look around. I see lots of F's. Either we're all right or we're all incorrect. But in this case, I'm on the test. We're going to go right. Well done. Okay, next one. These assessments are used during instruction to check for understanding. S or F. Okay. Next. I'll be a little more clever here. This isn't too clever. These assessments are used to adjust teaching during instruction. Are you sure? These assessments are used to adjust teaching during instruction. Anybody want to change their answer? No? Nobody's changing it? Are you sure? Okay. All right, I see what the chat says. That's correct. Well done. Okay. Next one. F is formative, right? That's one of the items, formative assessment. These assessments provide items for the grade book. These assessments provide items for the grade book. Without looking around, do your own work on them. I see lots of S's. That is correct. Well done. Okay. Just a couple more. A quiz at the end of the unit. S or F? Quiz at the end of the unit. Why is that summative? Do you mind telling us why?
Yes. Sure. It's done at the end to kind of summarize their learning.
Okay. What else would you say about that? Done to summarize their learning.
Graded.
It's graded. It's the end of the unit. Okay. That, those are some of the elements of summative. And it's, at this point, it's not too late to go back and do some teaching, but anyway, at the end of the unit. And you need to press on. And now you're having to stop and go back and reteach perhaps. If you weren't checking, but I'm saying wrong way. Okay, great. Moving on. A thesis paper due in the semester. Thesis paper is S summative. Excellent. You all don't need this session. It's time to go. Let's go home. Great. Next. Just two more. Hand signals to check for readiness. Use of hand signals to check for readiness. Oh, excellent. Take a look around. Oh, okay. Yes. No, that's not right. Formative is great. I don't know what that was. Is that something Spanish? Or no. Okay. I don't know. Three. Last one. For the use of a response card. Response cards, like we're doing right now, response cards are a kind of formative assessment. We're just checking for understanding. Excellent. So, if you haven't used these kinds of things before, again, it doesn't have to be that complicated. It can be very quick. The whiteboards are fantastic. Many of you are using those already. Many uses for whiteboard. In my class, we do them for just key aids. We've got a list of key aids all the students are required to memorize. And they write on there, show it, wipe it off, take a look around. Again, the key is getting to do it without looking around. You've got to hold it closed, and we show it all at the same time. And then erases. The nice thing about that, same thing with the response, there's nothing permanent about that. We hand out the whiteboard, we write on it, we erase it, it's gone. It doesn't go in the grade, but same thing with the response, they flash it, and that's it. But it just gives you a very quick check. It just takes a few seconds to do that. My wife teaches third grade, she uses whiteboards all the time with just pocket sentences or any kind of practice. Tim Griffiths in the Latin session mentioned talking about using whiteboards in Latin just for composing. And again, the nice thing is it's not permanent, particularly for younger students. Sometimes they can get frozen when it's putting something on paper, right? And they're just writing on a whiteboard and it goes away. It doesn't have that permanent feel to it. They just erase it. Practicing math equations, it's like Okay, same thing with response cards. In this case, it was specific. Sometimes I'll just use an A and B card. An A and B can be anything. It can be true or false. It can be particular offers. I have response cards before. I can't look at it at the moment. Maybe not so often that. But I have one exercise with quotations from Montesquieu and Rousseau. All right, some of this quotation. So they have a Montesquieu product and a Rousseau product in MR. And the same thing, how to read a quotation, they hold it apart. Do you think that Rousseau is a great review activity? We did that at the end of the teaching. It was during the lesson we read some primary sources and went back through using that. But then a couple weeks later, it came back to using the same cards, same quotation, same cards as a review, just to see how they were doing and seeing if we needed some clarification. So whiteboards, response cards, we've done some admit slips, just pointing hand signals. These are all great ways to check for understanding during the learning. Again, it's not a grade, it's just a quick check to see if there are issues that you need to deal with before moving on. So typically I'm doing these at the end of the lesson, next pass, kind of thing, but very often in the transition period, like we're going to do right now, on any more of the slips of paper left, what are we?
Yellow?
Yes, yellow slips. Just a few. Okay. Could we hand up just a few? Those who didn't get one, you can just pretend you're getting one. On that slip of paper, class, would you please write down one question that you still have? One question you have right now, please. Just hand it to whoever's closer and they can do it. Thank you. We got questions, and then you can pass those really quickly back to the audience. So on your chart, would you please find, if you've got that handy on your phone and you can look at it, take a quick look at the exit pass section under the writing prompts. So exit passes are fantastic. Again, show of hands, how many people use exit passes in your classroom? Okay, great. So an exit pass is just, it's a slip of paper, you get 3x5 card, anything that you're going to collect from the students on their way out, or again, in the transition, like we're doing now, the transition between one learning and another, before we move on, or before they leave the class. I wait outside the door, you hand me the exit pass before you can leave. That's the deal. So if you take a look there at that, there are many different ways. This, by the way, is just the tip of the iceberg of available form assessment. As you know, many, many ways here. These are just a few. So exit pass, what's the most important thing we learned today? Write down a question, write down one thing I can help you. What do we need to do tomorrow? One of the three key points we address. It really, the sky's the limit. There's many, many things you can do. And it's very quick. It's a very quick check. I do one of these almost every day. It's just a very quick review. They do that back to me on the way out. So, did we get those exit passes? All right, so if we could just pass those, sort of, if they could make their way to the front, that would be great. So, if you take a look at that, take a look at the chart and the handout, you can see many ways to do that. Again, we're transitioning from one activity to another, collecting the period. They can be photocopied. If I take these and as soon as all gone, I take back with them and I see some common questions or common issues. Thank you. And I want to photocopy those. We can handle that the next day and get them in small groups and answer the question. Or maybe I'll just read through them in the class. So anonymously, of course, I don't want to embarrass anyone. And we may just go through those. If it's a question, well, I may just go through those and say, okay, here's a question, this is interesting, here's another one. I've got three of the same question. That's interesting. What does that tell us about what we're learning more essentially? And we work our way through it. Again, I might take a couple of minutes, it might turn into a new lesson, depending on what I find on the exit path. So, and so there are times when I will take that, so great, we all have that. Pretty well down, that just goes in the cycle a bit. Or perhaps I've got 16 of them, fine, I've had this one student, or maybe two students, that didn't quite get it. So I may pull them aside for class, or some of the times they get, you see a question here, then we talk about this very briefly. So in many ways, from recycling, to turning into a small group, maybe it's a reteaching, maybe it's just an individual thing or a quick review. Right, so next class are great, they're just infinitely flexible. And this, again, you go on the internet, you can find nice documents that people created in the same next class. It's like a little ticket. Next ticket is another term some people use. It's a blank ticket, and you can find nice. You use scratch paper or 3x5. Again, one of the nice things about this is it just goes in the recycle. I'm not more than you recycle. I do all that here for the garbage, but we recycle this. So it goes away, it's not graded, and there's no pressure. It's not equipped, and it's gone. If you could just very quickly take a look at page 3 and 4 in your package, if you have that. Again, this is on the classicalteaching.com website. We'll look at that later. This is one thing I did with this as an example type thing you can do with the next class. And it was a little bit more sensible. Again, sometimes they're very quick. This one I turned into not only a review at the end of the period, check understanding, but also the next day. So this is my handy letters class, and we were talking about the factors favoring Great Britain before or at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. We've gone through many things. So at the end of the period, I asked them, on the extra pass, this coordinating period, to list as many of those as they can remember. You know, now they're going to, okay, we've done the speculative reading and discussion. How many factors they rewritten on the extra pass of the cards? I collected them, and then we did a round robin with just one at a time. Okay, give me one. We just kept going until we got as many as we could that they're all done work, and then we can fill them. One or two of them. So it was a quick check to understand. I could see what they knew, collectively what they could remember, and then I took those away. Now the next day, what I did is I took those again and I added some distractors, some either ambiguous items or some false items, and I had them put their heads down and close their eyes and all that, which they enjoyed, of course, laboratories. And I read through these and okay, we did the thumbs up, thumbs down, really quick. Everybody saw everything behind them. Cold resources, yes, thumbs up. Centralized government, control of the economy. That's a thumbs down, right? So we're going all the way through these. And most of them were genuine. There were a couple of distractors that were false. And then again, I'm checking. So all the thumbs are up, great. They all got it right. But then I'm asking students, why is that true? Explain more about that. Add on to that. What do you think? Please elaborate. And we had a discussion about any one of these features. So it's a quick check, and also we go more in depth. Then if you get an ambiguous answer, you try to draw that out. If you get a false answer, then you ask them to look around and let's say, no, why are you wrong? Tell me why you have that. Please help that person. And then, of course, you go back to that person. Don't you never leave them with the faults and make them restate the correct answer. So this is just one way, again, using XPath. So it can be a very quick check again. We can turn into a review at the next lesson. Okay, working down the chart, we have a grouping there of writing, pair share, rewrite, pair share, ATLP, BTLA kinds of things. That can be done again very quickly. I won't talk too much about that, but that's another way to check what I'm saying. They're usually paired up, and they're thinking, they're thought about something, they're writing, as they're discussing it, or they're just a quick ATLB, or you've done that. Turn to partner, 30 seconds, tell them this, then you tell them. Now, you're not hearing, you're not collecting information from everybody, but if you have 16, 18 students, you can very easily walk through the room while they're telling each other, and you're listening on that discussion. And then you can stop and say, okay, tell me what your partner said, tell me what she said. And again, you can turn it into a long thinking. Very quick processing activity as well as a check understanding, and it can get more extensive if you want to do it. If you have time, sometimes it's just a quick one. So there's thinking, pairing, there's rewriting, pair share. Again, how many of you have done some version of these? I would recommend that to keep doing those. It's a very good way just to quickly check And the point is that you want to make sure you're responsible for their learning, and that's how you know. You don't want to wait until the end. You want to wait until the test. That's too late. We have failed them if we wait until 3 weeks to test them and we discover that there's learning that didn't happen. There's lost opportunity. Okay. On the 3x5 part, there's going to be handwriting. Sorry to do this. It's going to be the last. On the 3x5 part, I think there's plenty of those. They're pretty big one. Unless you really don't want to play, then you just sit in the back. This is a, we're going to 3-2-1 card. Hey, how many 3-2-1 cards? Okay, good. 3-2-1. So on this, would you please write, this is the way I read the class. I don't think I'm going to take time to read. 3 key ideas so far. What are the 3 key ideas? We've been here for half an hour. Have there been 3? I hope so. 3 key ideas. 2 questions. I would argue some of your questions. 2 questions. And 1 connection. Another speaker. Here's about 3 key ideas, 2 questions, 1 connection with another speaker. Now, if you want to go 1-1-1, or that's fine. I do all 3. 1 key idea, 1 question, 1 connection with the previous speaker. Now, I'm not going to collect these from you. If this is my class, I at some point probably would. After we have a brief discussion again, I want to take those and look at them and see what you're doing. But we don't do that, just kind of leave my notebook right here. But I'll give you just a few more seconds on your 3-2-1 card. Or your 1-1-1 card, or 0-0-1, whatever you can do. Or 0-0-0. So as you can see, it really doesn't take that long, but it's a way to check. Our students, and I'm asking them not to look at their notes, right? Just from what we've discussed. Without checking those, what are the 3 points? 2 questions. This could be anything. It could be questions, connections, what's confusing, what do you agree with, disagree with. And the number isn't important. Again, it could be 2-2-2, it could be 1-1-3, it could be any combination and almost anything. But it's just another tool, another method to do it. Okay. I'm going to give you about 10 more seconds. I'm going to ask them, if you don't mind. Now, usually, if I'm going to do this course, one of the features in a formative assessment for me is it voluntary or involuntary? Voluntary, involuntary. Involuntary, everybody. I'm not just taking hands, right? Show me, because then you're just dealing with the students that are confident. And you're not really checking for understanding. You just ask for a show of hands or any questions. That's not checking for understanding the whole class. I'm going to be appropriate, I'm not saying it's wrong, but you want to check everybody. So typically, I'd be doing cold calling. I'm not probably going to do that right now. I won't embarrass you. But I would cold call, and then I would collect these. But maybe just for the sake of this particular group, so we don't all know the trust to do it. Maybe I can catch the ball and take a let's do the last one. Connection with another speaker. I'm actually really interested in this. Have you made a connection with a previous speaker you've heard here? Yes, ma'am.
2.
Oh,
this
is 1 time.
the one I went to earlier on the opening of the article discussion, you talked about starting the prompt with and come to have a discussion with what you read last night. Give you 3 things that you learned from that.
So that's a pre-discussion activity reviewing from previous. What was the other one?
You were the headmaster at the school where Joseph Clare's son was
there. Yes.
So I wondered if you had your wife at the
church. Yes.
Okay.
My wife had his son this year. Thank you. Other connections. Exactly the headline that I read. Clare's great. Yeah. Other connections.
You're here on formative. Rebecca Merkel gave a really great one on summative, so there's a nice pairing.
Yes, thank you. So summative and formative. And so I hope you didn't hear me say summative was unimportant or somehow lesser assessment. We do need to do those summative events, gradebook events. Oh, I'm not a big fan of grades and that kind of thing, but we do have to do those. I think it's a combination we make modernism. We do grades. We do, but you want to have a big event at some point. I teach rhetoric and we give speeches. Like that's a summative event. Now we do plenty of practice, 4 minute practice along the way, but at some point they have to get up and do a 5 minute speech. That's a summative event. So those are important, absolutely. But I think typically though, I think that's what we tend to think. Assessing, learning, we think independent tests or standardized testing or something like that. And those have their place, I'm not opposed to them. But what I really want my teachers to do, I try to teachers, do a much more formative assessment deliberately. And you have to build it into a lesson plan, or it probably is not going to happen, at least for me. I have to write that in my plan. Here are my objectives, these are my assessments, then I can talk about all the neat things I want to do. I've got lots of activities I've been teaching for 35 years. Lots of activities I can do. But I've got to start here, and I have to check the learning, then I can get the plan of activities. Okay, one more connection, anyone else that they're going to do this? Or?
Christian talked about assessing students, assessing ourselves, and he started with that whole idea of, the students aren't learning, the teachers are teaching. He said it in a very different way, but he put the onus on the teacher, which I think is really, really powerful.
Right. My quotation is Marx's Souls, so I think that's authoritative. Right. Souls. Yeah. That's great, thank you. Okay, so there's 3-2-1 parts, or N 111, or whatever it happens to be. Towards the bottom of that first page are sticky notes. It's another method I use. How many of you use sticky notes to do some formative assessment? Excellent. And I have some over here on the board or on the wall. Maybe you can take a look at that afterwards. I just wanted to try to show some of the ways to do that. So if you look at this, there's so many ways you can use sticky notes. I know some of the big ones are more expensive, so not in the head schools, so I can do that. A little lead teacher may not do that, but just the post-it notes themselves can be very, very useful, and they're highly flexible. We'll put them on the whiteboard and move them around as part of discussion. I collect them, sometimes they go in the trash, but typically I'll collect them and use them again to review. So I would encourage you to think about sticky notes. Again, they're not permanent, they're just on the whiteboard for a few minutes, they're easily moved. You can do the same kind of thing as writing on the whiteboard, but then you have to erase it and write again. Whereas just being able to shift around, you've got categories of sticky notes that students put on the board, and then discuss it. There's really good things that should be there, should be here. You can move them around, defend why you put that there. It leads to all kinds of wonderful discussions. So I encourage the sticky notes. Just a few things here you can look on the chart. I've prioritized what's most important, key dates. We can do these individually or as groups. Causes, one cause, effect, another. Put them on the board. Cause and effect. Break up into four groups. You do the causes, you do the effects. Take 5 minutes. I'm circulating and listening to the discussion. We put them on the board. And then, down to discussion 9 minutes. Why? And this is part of your checking. As you listen to the discussion about these causes, you can hear the 2 out of 4 students doing all the talking. So when it comes to board time, now we get to call on the other two. Okay, great, your group put these under cause. Why is it? Why did you put that under cause? And if they didn't know, then we would cancel that. So you're sort of mixing in cold calling in with this activity. So cause and effect, a range of class or small group or an individual, again, timeline. One of the things I'll do with timeline is if we have these key dates, I will. I have 2 sets of sticky keys, one with events, the other with the dates, and I'll just take them. We'll just come up, I'll give them an event, they can put it on the board in the right order, some sort of chronology game. Then we'll do the dates, okay, we've got the events. Maybe once they're up there now we talk about doing the rearranging. So I'll get all in the right spot because they're there, but they're not correct. So we get a chance to shift them around, then we add this to the dates, and this is just a quick review period. And it can take as long as you want it to take. On the second page, page 2, it came with sticky notes, discussion items and section of text. I have a couple of those, I think, over here in the multicolors there. Again, just working in groups. In this particular case, it was preparing, it was just taking a section of text and what are some connections, key ideas, and questions, and interesting facts. So we were preparing for a part of this discussion on the text section. So I broke it up into four groups, gave them different colored sticky notes, and asked this group to write three connections, this to do three, and because as you can see there, we put those up on the board, and then we had a chance to discuss them before we actually went into the heart of the discussion. And sometimes some groups need that kind of thing before they can prepare to do a seminar discussion. They need a little priming. It's great for compare and contrast, or a longer session called a curated discussion, which I'm not sure we have time to talk about this, but everybody needs to be an expert. Have you ever used that kind of thing where a group will prepare a list, we'll do the charts, and then we'll mix the groups, and they'll rotate around, they're going to post on the wall, they'll rotate around, and so each group now has a member for each of those original groups. So everybody has to be an expert at some point. It's a big sticky note in that case, but it's the same kind of idea. So I would encourage you to use the sticky. Let's look at one thing really quickly, page 10 and 11. This is a little longer activity. This would involve Pride and Prejudice. So one of those I teach in my A-letter classes is also Pride and Prejudice. And the middle of the book, as you know, is the proposal. Or the first proposal, followed by the letter. We have the proposal and the letter. And what we look at is Elizabeth and Darcy, how they act, how they feel, what they do, and what does that tell us about their character? What do they do, what they feel, what they say, what does that tell us? Both for the proposal and for the letters. We're looking for an insight into their character, also how their character is changing, particularly the letter, right? And how that changes, gets to change Lizzie's character, or at least her thinking about her character. She realizes for the first time what a fool she's in. So, sticky notes, take a look back on page 11. You can see how this looks with my scribbly handwriting on the board, the proposal, the letter, the actions, the character, what it shows, and the students have put the post-its, the sticky notes on the board. And then we have a great discussion. Why is that there? What do you think? Is that really the character of Darcy? Do we need to move these around? Do we take something away? What's missing? I have to think about what we need to add. It creates a marvelous discussion. And again, you can pull call individuals. So this is more of a group activity, so it's not maybe as all play as it should be, or ideally would be, but you can get everyone involved pretty easily through just requiring them to defend why those things are, or talk about what the other group is. Is that the way you read this letter? What's good, what's bad about those things? Okay. I want to save some time for questions. 4:10 is my closing time. Very good. Let's move on to bubbles. Bubble graphic organizer is the next thing I guess on your chart. Again, there are a number of different ways to do this. Graphic organizer, bubble chart, there's timeline chart, many different ways to use a very quick check for understanding. On page 13, you see a double bubble. I just have my students read, well, the summer, the 10th grader part, even that would be while they're happy. They'll read in late August. But they could be reading right now, either The Prince or Utopia. And they write a worldview paper. What are the themes of The Prince and what biblically assess that value? And they come back with the paper. And then they have a great discussion on that first day, sort of marvelous reference discussion. But one of the things I ask them to do is first to do this individually. And this is similarities and differences, right? So you've got The Prince, you've got Utopia, you look at the back page, and it sort of shows a picture of what actually did on the board of that one. So Utopia on one side, Prince on the other, the similarities right down the middle, and then the differences on the outside. This is a way to graphically, some students do better with the graphic organization, the visual organization of information, learn. It's not all verbal, That doesn't help everybody, but it helps me, so try to mix it up. Sometimes dancing, sometimes next passes, discussions, some of this. And this, in this case, it's a pre-discussion activity. So they fill this in on their side, and then I'll pair them up. A Prince and Utopia pair up, and they'll compare, fill in what they don't have, because they probably only have one side. Some students could be both of those, but that's pretty rare. So we'll pair them up, the grades will be coded, they'll fill in, and then we can have a full class discussion. This is what we see here. And then I will collect those reports as well. So it's a, in a way to check for saying the process and review and have a discussion. I hope I didn't run through that too quickly. Okay, the last thing on here for me is Harkness discussion. For us, a seminar discussion, the Harkness discussion are really just a way to check for understanding. They're not an event. I know some schools have shied away from having some Harkness or had trouble with Harkness in the past because students get so nervous and so anxious about the Harkness because it's going to be a big, great discussion. And we do them so frequently, 4 or 5 times a week in my class. There's so many, and it is graded, so this way you can buy the experience and you grade them. But it's chiefly a way to check for understanding. That's what we try to explain. This is not a big event, it's not a display or a performance. This is just me checking for understanding. The best way for me to know whether you understand something is for you to have a conversation with someone about it. Can you talk to a group of 7 or 8 other students intelligently and ask important questions and make connections? About this topic. If you can do that, you pretty well understand what we're doing. It's not the only thing. We'll have a test at the end of the unit, we'll write papers, we'll do all that. But a Harkness discussion is simply a means of checking and understanding. Now it takes 40 minutes as opposed to 4 seconds with the hand signals, but at the same time, it's one of that as well. Next question.
I'm grammar, and I use the whiteboards a lot and the thumbs up.
Yes.
Well,
I certainly think grammar level can use graphic organizers. Absolutely. Now, Harkness discussion, I know that with our 6th grade, they will do some fishbowl kinds of activities.
Yeah,
in
2nd grade.
Okay, so 2nd grade, yeah, maybe not. But I think graphic organizers are very appropriate for 2nd grade, for sure. Absolutely. So, accent passes, I don't know, maybe just a couple of words. I think what's one of the beauties of this is they are adaptable to just about any grade level in different forms. Okay, last exit pass. You're going to keep this one. I don't need to hand out anything. You're going to write yourself an exit pass. So I'm not going to collect this. Write yourself an exit pass, which you list 3 specific ways you'll use formative assessment in an upcoming year. And for those of you who are vectoring teachers and doing this, 3 new things, or 2, or 1, nobody's checking, but make a plan. What 3 specifically, that was my goal here, is to give you something you can take back to your classroom this fall. 3 specific kinds of formative assessment you will use. Well, I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to get to the admin slips of that exit passes. Thank you for running around and picking those up. We have about 10 minutes, so we have a few minutes for questions. So before we get, let me just tell you, we can talk more about this if you'd like. Later, I do have a 4:30, 4:45 shuttle, so I'll be sort of wandering my way that way. I'm happy to talk to you as we go. Also, check that website, classroomteaching.com. It's my website. There's lots of free materials, resources, teacher resources there that you are welcome to use. On formative assessment, on all kinds of other things as well. So classroomteaching.com, or you can email me. It's my email address there. Please feel free to email me as well if you have questions. So, yes, ma'am.
Can you explain the RAF activity?
Yes, so the RAF is a writing activity where you give a student a role, his audience, you tell the audience the format and the topic. So you're stranded on a desert island and you're writing a letter, a final letter to your, so there's an audience, to your family, there's the format of the letter, and the topic is what you learned about life. And I just made that up, that's probably not really good, but that's the campaign. So you're giving a specific thing to do. that probably doesn't match your learning target, so I'd have to rethink that example. But so you think of, you put them in a situation and you ask them to write about the learning targets, or industrial revolution, or industry, and you probably think of something better. That's what I'm saying. Other questions?
How do you use whiteboards
in
literature?
Any ideas in the audience? Whiteboards in literature, yes.
I mean, one quick thing would be just what they know, some quick facts. So, examples of similes, metaphors, figures of language.
Right. Similes, metaphors, right.
And so, quick factual knowledge is really useful.
Quick facts, yes. You can do stories on the whiteboard very, very quickly. Let's quickly run through the themes of favorite to cities. Give me a theme. That's a really good question. Again, it's quickly checking if I'm understanding. That's the thing. Are they understanding the learning target? I'm checking very quickly. I can imagine that there might be, for example, where a whiteboard is not really appropriate for that particular learning target. So you just kind of think through what the target is. Good. Any other questions? Yes.
Could you speak a little bit more about the heart discussion?
Yes. 3 minutes. Yes, heartless discussion. Okay, speak a little more about heartless discussion. A heartless discussion is something called a seminar discussion, and it is a process method. It's, I don't want to say technique, but modernistic. It's not technique, but it is an approach to learning where students are required to discuss a topic or a series of topics around the table or the desk, where they are doing most of the work. This is the distinction that I make between, say, a Harkness or seminar and maybe a Socratic, I know those are absolutely different. But for us, a Harkness is actually puts more of the work on the students. So the students are preparing based on a text, so I give them a text, a section of reading, perhaps some questions or topics. They write some questions, and then they will have a discussion, which I will participate in at some level. I try to participate as little as possible and make them do the work. That's the whole point. Never work harder than your students. That's the whole time. Make them do the work. Now, I'm there stepping out and just letting you go, taking hands on. I'm there, but I want them to do the work of discussing through the text, not just sharing feelings. They're looking at text, supporting their answer, making connections to previous learning, asking each other questions, not just scoring points on my checkbox. So that's very good. Just to get more information on the website on part of the discussions. But it's kind of thing we start early with that, and by 11th grade, they're pretty well on the run. Certainly by senior year, they're leading and running their own discussions. And it's not just sharing opinions or sharing views. It's based on the text. And they have to defend, and they will make you go to defend their answers. And you said that, but they can show me where you found that in the text. And they do it. Thank you. Thanks for asking. Good. Other questions? And if you'd like to talk more, I'll be last question. Yes.
What was thank, pair, and share again?
Think of questions. So I'll give a question to think about. What was the most important cause of the Industrial Revolution? What was the most important thing? I'll give you a minute to think about that. Write and read. I might have it in the right. So think, perhaps, I think. Write 3 sentences. Now, partner up and explain that to someone else. So there's a thing like. There. And then we'll talk about this group. So you can mix and match those, but it's giving them, it's processing them through. And then I collide that by asking them on a card or slip of paper. Does that make sense? Great. All right, thank you again. Can I get free to email me if you have any questions or want to talk?